Sunday, May 30th, and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Good morning and welcome to Her Turn, a program of feminist news and information. I am Christina Kivlin.
And I am Garima Gupta. Today, we are in conversation with Peggy Weschroeder, who is the executive director for FREE and works on issues of prisoners' justice. Good morning, Peggy. Thank you for being
on. Good morning.
Thank you for being on the show this morning. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic. So can you give us a brief introduction on your background and a little bit of your activism?
Sure. So I was born while my mom was incarcerated at Techira in 1970. And so that really has fueled my desire for women's incarceration to end in the state of Wisconsin, or severely decreased, at least in the United States. I would love to live in a community where we reimagined incarceration and instead allowed people healing and didn't send any, or at least not so many, women to prison.
Wow. Thank you, Peggy. I think that's very inspiring. You also made history by being the first Hispanic woman to be elected to the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. How was your experience and did you face any challenges out there?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I would say this. I think it's hard to be the first of anything. And as Latinos emerge in modern day politics, I think it is a more difficult for us because we don't always have the backing. African Americans have been around in politics for many years. I'm not saying that it's easy for them. It's definitely not. But they definitely have a backing, the NAACP, and organizations that come out and really support them when they get in trouble or when they need the support. Latinos right now, we're still at the point where we're trying to develop those supports. In addition to the fact that we have the lowest voting rate of any you know, group of people. And so a lot of us aren't even eligible to vote because of our citizenship, our status in this country. And so that makes it also difficult to build political power. So there was that. But being at the county level, we were able to accomplish a few really good things.
So starting on the 23rd until today, you were in Washington, D.C. for the Free Her 10th Anniversary March. Can you tell us a little bit about that march and, you know, what exactly it was that you were marching for?
So we were in Washington, D.C. We participated in the National Council of Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, had their 10th anniversary march. And it's also the National Council also is a lot of times referred to as Free Her. And they do so many incredible things. And so 10 years ago, they held their first march and they called for an end to women's incarceration in the United States. They were calling on governors and the president to commute women's sentences and to send them home. And over the last 10 years, as you are probably aware, women's incarceration has actually increased in the United States and not decreased. And in 2023, when President Biden handed down his computations, he commuted 23 people's sentences, and none of those people were women. And so we were like, we've gotta march so that we can draw attention to, again, to the fact that women do become incarcerated. Women's incarceration affects our whole community. When you incarcerate a woman and take her away from her children and her family and her job, you know, there's a ripple effect in our communities that lasts sometimes for generations. And I don't think that the powers that be give that impact enough thought. And so that's why we march. We went to Washington, D.C., marched along with, I mean, we sisters from all over the United States. I think almost all of the states were represented. And each one of the states obviously has their own issues that they're working on. And just sending the message that there's so much work to be done with women's incarceration, and that if we could focus on women's incarceration and ending women's incarceration, we really feel like we could solve a lot of the problems that we have in society by bringing our mothers home.
Can you tell us just a little bit about what are some of the main reasons that women happen to be incarcerated? What are some of those statistics?
So, I mean, a major reason for women's incarceration actually is domestic violence. And at the federal level, they just passed a law that would allow for women who were incarcerated on domestic violence cases to be reevaluated and possibly released. The problem is that a lot of states aren't learning that law and applying it. And so we have women who are still incarcerated, but they're actually eligible to be released. So DV is a big driver of women's incarceration. The opioid crisis is a big driver of women's incarceration. Substance use disorder is a huge driver. And so, again, our argument is if we can treat women in the community and help them to deal with the trauma that goes along with substance use disorder, that we would be able to then not have to incarcerate them. And the last big driver of women's incarceration is mental health. And again, I don't think anybody in our society can argue that we do mental health very well. It's often still very misunderstood. About in Wisconsin prisons, about 63% of everyone who is incarcerated has a diagnosed mental health issue. And again, that means diagnosed. And I think that if we took the time to really diagnose people who are sitting in our prisons in Wisconsin, we would learn that that's probably a much larger number. There's many research, much research has been done to show that women, but anybody with mental health issues, prison is not the place for you. And unfortunately, with the attention that we've been receiving around the lockdowns going on in the men's prisons, we've also now learned that that men and women who have mental health issues don't always receive the medication that they need while they're incarcerated. And so their issues are not being addressed. And so it continues to perpetuate the cycle of returning to incarceration if we're not dealing with people and their needs.
Wow, that's quite insightful. Thank you, Peggy. Mm-hmm. You also got some youngsters from Milwaukee Trans Center for Youth, right? Can you talk some of their experience as well as some of your own?
Yeah, definitely. So we are involved with the Trans Center for Youth here in Milwaukee. It's four different alternative high schools. And we did a Know Your Rights training with them. We really want to focus more on youth and educating our youth on what goes on in the criminal legal system, because we often get asked, like, what's the best thing that we can do to end mass incarceration? And really the best thing you can do is to educate youth and also their parents. because we believe that we have a lot of protections in our society that we don't actually have. And so as a parent of young people, one of your main goals should be that your child knows their rights and that they know how to interact with the police and with the school officers. We have police right inside of your children's school who have access to them all day while they're away from you. And that should be very alarming to us. And so we have been working with them. We watched When They See Us, the documentary series with them, and had conversations with them about incarceration. And a lot of them obviously have lived experience when it comes to having an incarcerated parent or an incarcerated loved one, or they've had dealings with the police. And so because the Free Her 10th Anniversary March really was focused on Mother's Day and trying to get a message out that we need our moms home, they really felt that message, and they were really excited to be in Washington, D.C. and marching alongside of us.
Yeah, that's very amazing. They are the future, right? So definitely.
Yeah, they are the future, yeah. Right.
All right. Can you also talk about how these issues of incarceration affect women of color differently? Like, issues of racism is like quite well known, right?
Right. Well, you know, African-American and Indigenous women are the two largest populations of women that are incarcerated in the state of Wisconsin. And so on, you know, obviously when you take a look at the whole pie, they're also two of the smallest groups.
Yeah.
And so we have the highest rates of incarceration among the small sector. When you take a look at, again, we talked a little bit about the drivers of women's incarceration. But really, one of the things is the lack of resources. And so obviously there's discrimination that happens with the court. People have, you know, biases regarding women of color. So we tend to get longer sentences for the same sentence as white women. But then there's also the economic aspect of that and the cost for having an attorney. The cost for having your own legal representation versus using a public defender. And some public defenders are phenomenal. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're actually paying for your defense, it's better. And so, so those are some of the things that we see in communities of color that are happening to our women versus women who don't share those same barriers. And so you do tend to unfortunately see more women of color being incarcerated. And again, for basically the same crimes, we're not committing different crimes. It's the same crime. It's just being handled differently.
Yeah, it's quite devastating to even hear about these things, and I'm glad that we are now voicing all these issues and have been continuing to do so, and I hope it makes some difference.
Yes, it definitely does. I think education is a huge piece of that, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons why we started Free, is because as we worked with Expo and the excellent work that they do in the state of Wisconsin, it just became abundantly clear to us that when you talk about incarceration, almost everybody thinks about men.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't think about women. And again, women's incarceration, it can cause damage to your, to your family roots that goes on for generations. And so we want to be able to address women's incarceration differently than men, because it is different. It's not better. It's not worse. It's just different.
Absolutely.
And also talking about like the socioeconomic status, especially of women of color. I know some of the statistics are, or some of the numbers are, women of color, especially black women, tend to make, I believe it was like 60 cents to a man's dollar. And then
right.
I'm not sure of the amount that Native women make, but with those socioeconomic issues, those tend to lead to the troubles when women are incarcerated, because you also
definitely.
Like, are there a lot more single family or like single parent women that are incarcerated? Do you think it's more of them?
So the statistic is that 85% of women incarcerated nationwide are were caregivers before they were incarcerated. So if you take a look at that and then you just look at the statistics in today's world, you would have to imagine that probably 60% of those were single parent households. And that you have now taken away the main breadwinner and the main caregiver for the family. And so, again, many states have started to pass caregiver laws so that they're actually able to look at women who are taking care of, and not just women, but men too, obviously, who are taking care of children by themselves differently and be able to evaluate and assess the situation differently. And again, as you talk about the drivers of incarceration for women, many women involve themselves in things in order to be able to support and sustain their families. And so a lot of times, if they were able to receive help, they would have, you know, they would have not been doing what they were doing, or if they were diverted and then received help. But the problem is that our system really is about punishment, and it's not really about fixing or helping, you know, people come out of that. And that's really where other organizations, you know, are become very important, because our system, we believe, is doing exactly what it was designed to do, which is incarcerating Black and Brown people.
Yes.
And so if we need to be the change that we want to see.
Yes. We also know that a lot of our prison systems are for profit. So it's not about rehabilitating people. It's all about just keeping them in there to make money.
Right. And even in Wisconsin, where that's not the case, you have truth in sentencing. So they literally, like, once truth in sentencing was enacted, they stopped doing educational programs. They really have lowered the employment programs. You know, you're looking at a system, again, where you're simply just housing people and saying, at a date certain, on a time certain, you will be released. And that's really what our job is. And that's all we care to do.
I know your focus is on ending the incarceration of women, but I assume you are similarly critical of the carceral state in general?
Yes. And no, most definitely. Yeah. Again, we would love to see, we're abolitionists. We would love to see an end to the carceral system. We lock people up, a lot of people up. And we're not really worried about what is driving them. We have a big focus on victims and, you know, prison as justice for, you know, for victims of crime, when many people that are being sentenced for those crimes have also been victims. And so until we really as a society start taking a look at what are some things that break people, and, you know, hurt people hurt people. So if we can take a look at what's hurting people and implement and develop plans again, I would say for our youth, maybe while they're in school, and try to address some of these things, we're never going to be able to close down prisons permanently make the type of change that we as a society should really want to see, which is that we have a society full of healthy, productive people.
Especially with the stigma surrounding mental health issues.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you don't fix mental health by incarcerating it ever. And I've never seen any research or heard from any doctors that said that, you know, yeah, this is absolutely the best way to, you know, to rehabilitate or to work with someone with a mental health issue is by incarcerating them. It just exacerbates the issue. And then once they're there, they don't receive the help that they need either. And they get out and they're worse than when they went in.
Yeah, absolutely. Peggy, you have also been working on a bill to end shackling of pregnant incarcerated women. Can you give us an update on the bill?
Yeah. So we have actually been working alongside state legislators. It's been one of the things. We actually worked really hard to make it a policy in Milwaukee County jails and jails across the state that they would not shackle pregnant, incarcerated women or girls. And we had had a lot of success with that. The previous DOC secretary also had a policy of not shackling incarcerated women and girls in that system as well. The problem is that DOC secretary is now gone, and we don't know what the next DOC secretary will do. So one of the things that we would like to see is it outlawed. We are one of only 11 states in the U.S. that does not have any type of law on our books regarding shackling of incarcerated women. So the issue becomes for us is when do we not want to shackle women? So it's been, we don't know of any, and if any of your listeners do, if they want to contact me, I would love to hear from them. Mm-hmm. But we're not aware of any jails or prisons right now that are shackling women during active labor, during childbirth, or immediately postpartum. But for us, that's really not good enough. What we would like is as soon as you have that validation that a woman is pregnant, that she then not be shackled. Shackles weigh 35 pounds. And especially when you talk about, you know, second, third trimester pregnancy, adding 35 pounds to a woman to take her to an OB appointment, you know, unless that woman is combative, I don't understand any reason why you would want to shackle them. So what we're seeking and what we have had really productive conversations with lawmakers about is a bill that would take into account that if you felt the need to shackle a pregnant woman or a girl, that you would actually then have to just fill out a report and say why it is that you thought that was necessary. Otherwise, throughout a woman's pregnancy, the expectation would not be that they would be shackled at all. And so that's what they've done in some other states like Alabama, mm-hmm. Minnesota, mm-hmm. and actually almost all of our surrounding states have very similar laws. And so that's what we, have had educational discussions with our lawmakers about. And we actually have an event that we do every year called Her Story, where we go to the Capitol. We're not asking or we're not supporting any particular bill or piece of legislation. We're just simply going to talk to legislators so they can hear from justice-impacted women and their allies around issues that are important to us. And obviously, the anti-shackling is one of those things that's super important, and we don't understand why it's been taking so long. Yeah. Senator Taylor started that legislation, I believe, in 2016. So it's been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, sure. Seems like that. Yeah.
I do know that some of the issues with, you know, having pregnant women in prison is when they give birth, a lot of them aren't even allowed to, like, hold their babies. And I know last time we had spoken with you, you were talking about a, like, prison doula implementation. Can you also talk a little bit about that?
Yes, definitely. So right now in the state of Wisconsin, when women give birth while incarcerated, they do that alone with usually prison guards in the room with them and medical staff too, obviously. But then, right, they are only able to bond with their child for 24 hours. Generally, there's no pictures taken of them with their baby or of their newborn baby. And then a lot of times the birth plan doesn't include what happens after. So women go back to prison and they don't know where their baby has ended up. They may have given the name of one or two family members, but they don't know if family members were able to get a hold of or whether or not their child's ended up in the system. And so that can be very stressful for new moms, as well as the fact that women go to prison, obviously pregnant, and sometimes that's their first pregnancy and they literally don't know what to expect. And so the prison doula program would be before, during, and after care for pregnant, incarcerated women and girls. We have actually made progress on that in that the warden at Tichita has allowed for Ostara, who is a partner of ours, and has said that they are willing to do a doula program in Wisconsin, but that we would have to do so before you have your baby, mm-hmm. they would do the education for you at Tichita, and then the postpartum would happen at all of the other women's facilities, because postpartum women don't always just stay at Tichita. And so that's a win for us. So we're right now in the fundraising portion of this, and we're also doing prison doula training across the state, in which we invite women or, you know, anyone who's already certified as a doula to come and to do a prison doula training so that they are, you know, able to know what to expect, helping someone who is incarcerated give birth. And there's obviously things that happen in that process that don't happen with just a woman giving birth off the street. Like, again, after 24 hours, at some point you have to prepare that mother that, you know, someone's going to come into the room and going to take their baby from them. And they don't know when they'll see their baby again. And that's a huge piece. And right now, again, that happens and women are not supported in that. And so we're excited to be able to get that moving. We hope within the next 18 months that will be fully up and functioning. We just did the Doula Association conference last weekend. That was in Middleton, and we have a lot of doulas across the state who are very excited to be able to work in that program. So that's phenomenal for us. And we've had some leading doulas in the state working with us from the inception of this idea. And so we're really excited. And I can say, like, for me, this is that once we get that program going, there'll be a crowning accomplishment for me, because I wish my mom had that. I wish that everybody's mom had that. I wish that I had pictures of myself as a newborn. I wish that I had pictures of my mom and I while she was in the hospital. And we don't have those, and that's obviously something you can never, you know, get back.
Wow, yeah, that's really got me some goosebumps. But thank you so much, Peggy. I think these little steps of success really keeps us motivating, and mm-hmm. it's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Can you just give us a brief where people can find information on free and also information for impacted youth?
Okay, so you can contact me at Peggy, P-E-G-G-Y, at free, freemvmnt.org. And actually you can contact any of the free staff. It's their first name, at freemovement.org. And then we also have our website. But honestly, the best way probably to reach us is through Facebook. Okay. We have Facebook pages for each of our chapters. We have one in Milwaukee, one in Dane, one in Chippewa Valley. And then we have a main free Reclaiming Women's Freedom page on Facebook. And so you can get a hold of us that way. We do have a website, which is www.freemvmnt.org. And we're really excited to hear from everybody.
Awesome.
So
Well, thank you, Peggy, so much for joining us. And now stay tuned for 2.5 hours of Women in Music on Her Infinite Variety with host Julia. And for her turn, I am Christina Kivlin.
And I am Garima Gupta. Have a feminist day.
With Valerie Kaur on Monday, April 29th from YWCA Madison invites you to join them for Revolutionary Love, an afternoon in practice with Valerie Kaur on Monday, April 29th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Monona Terrace. Valerie is a civil rights leader, filmmaker, lawyer, author, and innovator, and she will be guiding attendees of this event through the concepts of her compass of revolutionary love. This compass calls us to cultivate love for ourselves, others, and our opponents in our racial justice and collective liberation work. The afternoon will feature storytelling, guided meditations, and a musical performance by Sunny Singh. More information and registration is at ywcamadison.org. YWCA Madison invites you to join them for Revolutionary Love, an afternoon in practice with Valerie Kaur on Monday, April 29th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Monona Terrace. You are listening to WORT Madison.